And I think learning what we value and how we should set our priorities, therefore how we should spend our time, is a valuable skill set. Welcome to the WFO Life Podcast. Buckle up for interviews, insights, and practical discussions, and the occasional intellectual oddity, all designed to help you master self, master craft, and accomplish any life mission. Good afternoon, Dr. William Curtis with Lieutenant Colonel Chris Story here with the WFO Life Podcast here for another episode. Chris, how are you tonight?
Doing great. I like this switching it up, trying to knock one out a little bit earlier in the day. So we'll see if our energy and our topics are better or worse. So
good. Yeah, good. Exactly. I decline definitely after about 9 p.m. recording. My creativity and functionality go way down pretty quick. I've got a steep curve at that point.
Yeah, we'll make tight notes. So we'll make tight notes on this podcast and see if we're better or worse for it.
Yeah. And certainly get feedback. If somebody prefers the early version of our show, then we'll record earlier next time.
Voting boxes. We'll put out voting boxes.
There you go. Okay, so I had a topic. I think I found something that sparked my interest on Twitter that I sort of plugged and put together some thoughts on. And this I'm just going to throw it out there. This is going to be one of our conversational type topics where we kind of bounce ideas, and hopefully this is something that is thought-provoking for other people. The topic I wanted to cover was things that they should teach in school, or things that we should have been taught in school. And I'm talking about maybe even in grade school, because I think, when we get through some of these that we picked out to talk about, I think it's going to be pretty clear that, well, God, they do cover that in school, or, but I think sometimes it doesn't come across as practical as it needs to be. And I know, we're going to have a ton of experience, all over the place on a lot of these. So before I get going, anything you wanted to, bring up or anything going on for you?
No, I just think we're, as most people are dealing with, it's an interesting time. I know in South Texas, y'all are maybe where we were a few months ago with the COVID crisis. And so I think it's going to be interesting. And we may tie in some topics, especially with school, what school's going to look like next year. So right. I think it's going to be interesting to pull that in. And, I've been gradually going back to work where, I probably went 90 days or more without physically being in the office, which is very odd being in a military organization. Right. Now we're heavily civilianized where I work. So some of that is, part of the process, when you have military integrated into a bunch of civilian organizations, you kind of have to do as the Romans do, so to speak. You can't just be like, okay, we're military, we're all young and healthy and immunized for everything, let's just rock and roll, So right. I think we've learned a lot just trying to, it's good training, as we would say, trying to overcome and adapt. Say, how can we, especially now that technology is so pervasive, even being a military organization, I think it's or heavily civilianized / military organization, it's been good for us to, embrace the technology, so to speak, and see if we can operate as effectively through Zoom and Microsoft Teams and things like that. So it's been challenging but good. So hopefully we can tie in some of what's going on in current events with, what we should have learned in school.
Perfect.
Yep.
So on that note, first on the top of our list was time and task management. And I think I would put an asterisk next to this and also say, including how to prioritize things. When I think back to my education and the challenges that I've had in my life and certainly in my professional life, time and task management, actual nuts and bolts tools of how to organize myself and to get things done in a timely manner, in an organized manner, is a skill set I wish I didn't have to learn by reading 12 different books and patching that together over time. What say you?
Yeah, I think this is one of those, and you alluded to it from the get-go. I think some of these things happen as you progress in school and as you're exposed to higher complexity of schedule and subjects, it happens. But I think there is value in being deliberate about teaching kids relatively early on about, hey, this is what, you know, time management, what task management, what it means to prioritize. Because I think, I know for myself, until I probably got well into high school, I didn't realize that I was fumbling through how to do this. Right. And so I think, like what you said early on about being deliberate about it and teaching the kids, like, hey, there's this thing called prioritization. There's something called, and obviously at different levels, you could call it something else. You could come up with, you know, creative things that appeal to kids. If you started, you know, as early as, in my mind, it would be like second, third grade-ish.
Right.
But I think there is value because people learn differently, and some people are better at piecing together some complexities but not others. So I think that to appeal to a wide swath of learners early on, like I said, second, third, fourth grade, saying, hey, there's this thing called prioritization, time management. Here's some examples of how you already do it and you don't even realize you're doing it, and here's some maybe better ways or some best practices. So I think I definitely see value in that early on.
You know, and there's offshoots to that topic. Consider the idea, I threw out prioritization pretty early as I threw out the time task management. I think it's come to me naturally over the years as I've gotten older that I realize time is finite, that there's only so many days, or we hope we have days or years to accomplish the things that we want to accomplish or to spend our time doing the things we want to do. So the point being, there are things that are high priority, and I think learning what we value and how we should set our priorities, therefore how we should spend our time, is a valuable skill set, because it doesn't, there's plenty of stories, the Willy Lomans and the time wasted, and people can spend an entire lifetime wasted, not focused on what they need to be focused on.
Yeah, I think one of the ways you could probably do that early on in school is to focus on, and some of it, the curriculum is scheduled like that anyway, but to maybe be more deliberate and emphasize, like, hey, these topics that are cool, quote unquote, that people might think are fun, like current events or social studies or, PE or whatever, those are maybe not always the highest priority, because in school you need to read well, you need to write well, you need to learn the fundamentals of math. So that, in my mind, could be a way to start the kids and say, hey, we want you to be well-rounded and we want you to be exposed to all these subjects, but if you need to spend extra time, spend time on these, because these are the priorities. Like, it's not going to be any good getting excited about social studies and current events if you can't read well enough to really fully assimilate, these articles that you're searching out, or, watching. So I think that may be the start of it, early on, saying, as you get exposed to more and more subjects, sometimes that's the shiny object. Kids are, I remember when, science, like, had offshoots into health and nutrition, and so that becomes cool. But you don't want to spend so much time on your health and, even though that's important, and we'll get into that. But if in school, the point of it is to, reading, writing, and arithmetic are the, the kings and queens, so to speak. And then everything else, becomes a lesser priority. So spend more time on this, not that. And then that's an example of prioritization, and then time management is kind of part of that too. So
yeah, and cycling back to the time component, think of how much time is wasted on let's say gaming, social media, things like that. I'm thinking grade school. Think of how much time is spent on activities that are either meaningless or distracting or cause fragmentation of thought, meaning, you know, they don't allow for deep thinking or reflection. And the more time that's spent doing those things, it takes away from the things that are, you know, more important, or maybe have greater value over time. I think just paying attention and actually teaching young people, be aware of how you're spending your time. Be aware of it, because it's, as you get older, you're going to realize it's one of the most valuable, it is the most valuable commodity people have, quite frankly. It's more valuable than money. I can tell you, I've sat in front of many multimillionaires that are dying of cancer, and none of their money saves them. And, time is definitely the most important thing for so many people. And if you were taught in grade school, hey, you know, video games are fun, you know, being on TikTok or whatever is fun. But the reality is, keep track of that, keep it in its place, because you don't want it to take over and take away from things that are going to help you, learn about how the world really works, or maybe help you learn skills, active skills that you could apply that might be fun, or activity or physical fitness and all these types of things. There's so many skills to learn that I recall when I was younger, you know, there was less distraction. And I think kids nowadays need to be taught that about time and how to prioritize time, because they're at great risk for wasting a lot of time.
I was going to say, the word that came to my mind when you brought that up is just pervasive, because you think about it, phones and tablets and laptops and desktops and social media and advertisements about games and apps. It is pervasive, and there are good things about it. And I have this conversation with my kids a lot, and, you know, thankfully it's been a battle, but we've tried to prioritize things like sports and interacting with people and, you know, reading and things like that. But it's at the point where there's certain games that I've completely blocked on our kind of desktop home computer. But because I was explaining to my 8-year-old, because he got to where he was, I mean, it was scary, because it's almost like an addict. I mean, he was like making excuses on, you know, whether or not he was playing the games and, you know, trying to, and I'm like, and I was, I, you know, he's only 8, but I was explaining to him, I was like, hey, buddy, I was like, you know how when you see something on TV and somebody's like, you know, has rotten teeth and they're all skinny, and but they're only like 30 years old. And, you know, I tell you, that's, you know, they did crystal meth, or, you know, they're drug addicts. And he's like, yeah, that's terrible. And even at 8, he's like, why do people do that, daddy? And I told him, I was like, you know, I hate to say it, but, you know, the video games that you're playing are designed to be almost addictive as those drugs in a different way. I said, because they're set up to where there's always, it's never ending. You know, you're always, you know, trying to get to, you know, fight the next boss, or, you know, you can scroll through this entire world, or you can build all these things, or you can ask your parents for money and buy the special character. I said, the problem is, it draws you in and you never want to get off of it. And before you know it, you've sat there until you have to pee so bad you're going to pee your pants, because you don't want to, you know, get away from it. And I said, the point where you're, you know, making stuff up and telling us you weren't on there playing it when, you know, I come up and I know, I said, you know, it might be me, going overboard, but I want to make it a point to him to say, hey, you can't get so sucked into that fake world where you can't separate yourself away from it and get up and, you know, get some exercise, go read a book, talk to your brothers and sisters, you know, watch a TV show is even better in a lot of cases than sitting there in this never-ending world that, you know, captivates you, because especially now the graphics are so realistic, the sounds are so realistic, you know, it's almost like an alternate universe. And it's designed to suck you in. And I'm sure I scared the crap out of him because I'm making, you know, crystal meth comparisons to him playing video games. You know, maybe it's
like, son, the Marine. Yeah. If you don't believe that, your teeth are going to fall out.
Yeah. It's like the tough love Marine dad's version of it's like, you know, you want to be like that crazy girl you saw on TV in the wanted ad or wanted poster, you know, so.
Wow.
But anyway, that's I just want to, be serious about it to him because – you know, I see it everywhere, you know, and me and my wife get sucked into, you know, I don't play too many games or anything on my phone, but before you know it, I mean, even something that you could justify in your brain is educational, like scrolling through, you know, endless current events on Twitter and, you know, Facebook, and then you click on the article, and then you're reading the article that you clicked from 2 links ago, and then, you know, before you know it, you've watched 5 other YouTube videos that are linked at the bottom, and you're like, Jesus, you know, I just spent an hour and a half on, you know, right. Nada. So, anyway.
Well, and I know I've mentioned this on previous episodes, a lot of the folks that designed, let's take Facebook for instance. I had read somewhere that a lot of the designers of the software do not use Facebook.
Yeah, that's the reason good. That should be telling right there.
Yeah, and the reason is they had teams of people that developed, and every little button, every little thing and appearance of the software is designed to continue to encourage a little dopamine hit in your brain where you just want to keep hitting and want to keep scrolling, want to keep viewing, consuming content. And anyway, cycling back to the things that we ought to be taught in school, I think we've given ample evidence why kids in that age group need tools. They need tools, and they need to be told these are issues. Think how many parents might not be doing this and using social media or gaming as a babysitter. And if the kids don't see it, like you gave your son, you dropped some wisdom on him about what this, you know, what this really represents. It's a time sink, and it can be fun, but it should be put in a certain priority. And, you know, so I think we beat that up, but I think those are all great points about time, task management, and including the concepts about how we prioritize, how we spend our time.
Absolutely.
People just simply don't, you know, most people I know don't have enough skills in that area. And there's a lot of tools. So next one on our list was personal finance. Did you have any kind of finance classes or anything when you're in school?
The only thing I can remember, honestly, is when I was a senior in high school, through like the junior achievement class I was in, and it wasn't even personal finance so much. It was more economics, you know, it was right. Part of the, it was like, I guess that was like the advanced economics class. Like if you were in honors government and economics, they had a junior achievement where it was like you would create a company and it would teach you about buying stock and dividends and, you know, investing and starting a business. So it was really cool, but honestly, that was the first I remembered at all in any of my schooling talking about finance in general. So
I think because we went to the same high school, and I think I took the same, because I remember we started, it's kind of a funny story. We started this class and we were going to sell a product and we had to build the company and all these kind of things. Somehow I got elected as one of the officers of the company. And when it's kind of I'll try to shorten the story, but the kind of funny part of is we were supposed to, according to the formula, make a certain amount of money, right? If you sell the candy for 50 cents, then you can, you know, you get so much profit. If we sell so many units, the company's going to make this amount of money. And we actually went out and did this, you know, we sold it to kids in the school and stuff. Well, the entrepreneurial weasel that I was at the time, I decided as an officer that I would go negotiate other deals. So on my own, I went out to, I think I went to some kind of booster club for one of the, you know how they have it.
Oh, you got football? you got venture capital or?
No. What I did. So okay. Let's say we had like 500 units to sell, right? These like little bags of Skittles or whatever. And we were supposed to sell them for 50 cents. Well, I think it was the booster club for like the football stadium where they have the concessions and everything. And it was during football season or whatever. And so I went to him and said, look, how much you selling those Skittles for? And said, oh, we sell them for like $3 a piece or something, you know? So I said, look, I'll make you a deal. I'll sell these to you for $1.50 a piece and you'll be supporting our class and you'll also still make, you know, 100% markup on that. It made sense to me, right?
Yeah.
But the problem is at the end, the funniest part of the story is we go and we plunk all the money down at the end and we were supposed to have, let's say, you know, maybe we were supposed to have $1,000 or something. I don't remember what it was.
Yeah.
But I ended up with like three times the amount. And they were like, what did you do? And I said, well, I just went out and sold them at a higher rate than you said we should. And the teacher did not appreciate that, even though hindsight at the time, you know, looking back, I was like, what? How can we made more money? You know, how's that a bad thing? You know?
Yeah.
But anyway, I had probably the same class you did. But I guess what I was thinking about when we talked about what should be taught, I don't remember walking out of that class feeling like I fully understood the let's take the value of an interest rate when you're buying a car.
Yeah.
Or amortization on your mortgage on your home.
Yeah, or absolutely not.
Why you don't want to pay interest for 30 years on, you know, whatever X thing you buy, a home or a condo or something. I think that basic literacy of how compounding interest works. I remember having it in a class, but I don't remember it's like not I felt like I learned the hard way somehow.
What you're saying is I think we learned it in bits and pieces, maybe through math and maybe through economics, but I never felt like even through a senior in high school that there was any coherent strategy about how that applies to like your personal behavior, right? There was no tie-in to debt and income and savings, and I think that's the parents' job to do that, but there's a lot of other things that they don't assume that the parents are giving you, whether it be sex education or health or nutrition, whatever. So I think personal finance is something that a lot of adults absolutely don't understand. So I think it would be responsible to put that into the curriculum, I would say, really early on, just in kind of like a life skills class, you know?
Yeah, well, backing up, I definitely agree with you that that's a family. The family should be able to teach that.
Yeah.
But let's be real honest. We've got three or four generations now. The vast, if you took a big chunk of just the American population, I think we've got at least three generations that might be, maybe functionally illiterate when it comes to financial, literacy. Oh, yeah. I think it's very, there's a lot of folks that don't even have the skill set. They don't understand debt, liability, assets. I felt like in a lot of ways I've learned the hard way on certain things.
Yeah, I have
even
too,
though, even though I could give you a definition of what interest was, I didn't fully realize. Let's say, especially like car loans and things like that. Man, you look at the interest you pay on something like that. If you don't put a big chunk down, if you get even a 1% interest rate, that's more than you could have saved. I mean, it makes thousands of dollars of difference, which can impact your long term financial health.
Yeah, I was going to say until I was in my 30s, I definitely didn't take it seriously because in the military, there's an acronym and a cheesy thing for every situation. And so for so long, I was considered, I don't know if you heard the term DINK. Have you heard that? What, DINKs?
No.
Dual income, no kids.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, so and thankfully, from the time I was probably 22 or 23, I had a pretty, good paying job. My wife had a degree. She had a reasonably well paying job. And so even when we lived in Hawaii, which was really, high cost of living, I mean, we, you know, we didn't even think of, I mean, we didn't do a serious budget. You know, we thought, we're paying all our bills and, you know, we got a couple $1,000, you know, savings if we want, you know, want to like fly somewhere. You know, we got credit cards that, you know, sometimes we pay them off, sometimes we don't. And really until we got serious about having kids in our 30s, we didn't really think about it. So, you know, I'm a good example where even the things I knew and, you know, my father-in-law was my mom's remarried husband. You know, I wouldn't say he was my stepfather, but you know, because it happened much later in life. But he was a stockbroker, financial advisor from the time, you know, I was in my mid-20s. I mean, he was there as a resource. But like I said, I didn't take it seriously until I knew I had other lives I was trying to, you know, plan for and support. So it's scary because it's really easy, especially when you have dual income and a good credit score, you can buy all kinds of crap. You know?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So people can really, you know, I was noticing my daughter recently got married and she's moved, you know, away to Houston here in the last few months. And I remember knowing that she was going to be out of the household pretty soon. And I spent a lot of time with her hitting a few key things. Like I told her, I don't care whether you make $100 a week or $10,000 a week, always put a specific amount of whatever you make away into a savings. And I get, you know, I showed her how to, like, I just scratched that on paper, like the, you know, and you need to have 6 months of savings in a just basic access account. And then after that same 10 to 15% keeps coming out and it goes into another longer term investment. So you basically build this money tree or this, you know, this cash machine over time where money's working for you. Man, that topic, I wish I knew when I was her age. And I think it sunk in. I think her and her husband, I think that sunk in for them. And I hope that it has, that they it doesn't matter how much you make, always a chunk of it goes to, you know, to savings so that you're allowing your cash to build. Well, one of the big secrets for long-term investment and things like that is you got to have money to make money. And if you can stockpile that and get that working for you early, man, that is a lesson so many people need to know at a young age. And I guess I lump that under personal finance, but just the whole idea of having money to make money, and no matter what you make, you know, try to live below your means if as best you can, and always saving to move ahead. And I think that's huge. And should be taught in grade school.
I was going to say, and the reason why I think it's important to start that early on is because, and we know this from life experience, it's so much easier to do that when you're getting started in, you know, even in high school, but especially when you get your first professional job where you're making regular and you're making way more money. Like it's like overnight, you know, boom, you're making more money than you ever thought you would make. And it's exponentially easier to put that 15-20% into, you know, savings or a combination of savings and 401k, depending on what your company setup is. It's so much easier to do that when you're, you know, 23, 24, 25 than when you're 35 and you have a mortgage and you have two kids and you have competing priorities. Because like once, like you were saying, you set it up and you kind of pay yourself first and then you just like leave it forever. And you know, you make it auto draft, you know, some to savings, some to investments. And, you know, it's just so much easier when you start off from the beginning, because before you know it, you know, we have chunks of money in there for long-term savings and investments versus trying to start later. But when there's like always an excuse not to do it.
Check.
Yep.
So next topic, reasoning, logic, or critical thinking skills. Do you think that's something they should teach early in school?
I do, but I think in my mind, I'm struggling hard with what that looks like. You know,
well, so, you know, there are some classes, there's some kind of higher end education that teaches logic.
Yeah,
you
know,
you know,
in college, practical. I took it. Yeah.
It's a college level class. But yeah. I think that looking at how we think. Let's think about a week or so ago, a couple weeks back, didn't we do a whole topic or a couple topics on thinking traps? This whole idea of being careful what your thought processes are, you know, being more critical of the thoughts that pop into your mind. I might even extend this into maybe our next part of the topic. We're going to talk about mental health a little bit too, but the idea of, you know, do we trust everything that our mind, you know, every thought that bubbles to our surface, or do we critically think about that? I think it's important that young people are taught to really investigate and critically analyze what kind of things pop into their head. And that doesn't have to be a formal logic class, but it's certainly how our thoughts work, I think could be broken down into some type of topic that would be helpful for young folks.
Yeah, I think now that you articulated it more, what I was, you know, thinking was a huge part of this, especially as you're growing up and even as you get older, is being able to separate your emotions from, you know, the logic and critical thinking and mental health and or thinking traps. Because I know early on, I mean, it's just part of human nature. You know, your conflict resolution is out the window because it's situational. And, you know, it's usually, you know, kids flying off the handle at each other. So I think there would be a lot of value in, you know, teaching kids. I definitely didn't start addressing this topic until I got in high school and some of the classes and just other readings that I came across. But I think it is important to, you know, separate or I guess frame this logical critical thinking as a way that you can separate your emotions from, you know, situations. That way you can make better decisions and keep yourself out of trouble. You know, if that's
Kind of the way it is right now, we don't start analyzing thinking. And I'm glad you brought up the idea of emotions as well. You know, do we accept emotions? Do we just live them like a roller coaster? Or do we critically analyze where they come from? Why do we have to wait until you're at the counselor's office? Yeah. Maybe if this were taught in a way that, like, your emotions and how the thoughts that pop into your head, you don't have to automatically accept them as truth. Maybe teach that in a class setting or in some type, like you said, like some kind of life skill, like how to deal with, you know, how to deal with troublesome thoughts or how to deal with negativity or how to deal with conflict, you know, in your when you're conflicted in your thought process, how to maybe make a list of, you know, pros and cons if you're trying to make decisions. These are all thinking skills. And I think it would just be great to teach that type of thing.
Yeah, and this ties into, you know, a lot of our Stoic philosophy teachings. And I know with my 12-year-old, especially, you know, I think the smarter, the more driven, the more well-rounded a kid is, I think this is even more important, right? Because I think when they see or a kid say something or do something that's so far out of bounds for their paradigm, that is ripe for a kid to just have a completely meltdown, you know, response to it.
Right.
And so I think the way I framed it for my 12-year-old, I said, you can't let somebody else affect how you act or how you react.
Right.
And, you know, and I think I've joked about before on here, it's like you can't let people live, you know, occupy space rent free in your head.
Yep.
You know, and there's always, like, you know, and I know if your kid especially is competitive and, you know, you fill in the blank. I mean, ambitious, competitive, smart, or just emotional, there's always going to be that nemesis, that kid that rubs them the wrong way just by breathing. And I think this is a good example of how, you know, you have to prepare ahead of time that's going to happen. And
right.
So I think some of these classes we're talking about in a lot of different areas, but especially this one, says, hey, you know, you're going to be dealt as you get older, and as things get more complicated and as you grow up, you're going to have to deal with situations where if you're not logical, If you're not able to deal with a stressful, adverse situation, you know, you're likely to make the wrong decision that could have, you know, negative consequences. So here's a basic set of skills and some techniques that you can use to address these things and, you know, have debates without getting emotionally attached to your position. You know, deal with people and realize they're coming from a whole different background than you are, so you can't, you know, let them control like how you react to the situation. You know, focus on, you know, your own thought process and your own, you know, emotional control. Because a lot of times, this is another one of those cases where, I mean, parents are busy and dealing with their own stuff all the time and just trying to keep their kids alive half the time. So if you're not, you know, thinking about this stuff all the time, or if you don't have a job where, you know, you're able to really process this. I mean, if you're kind of in, you know, there's a lot of jobs that are hard work, you know, and may require some skills, but, you know, manufacturing, for example, or, you know, there's a lot of IT jobs where are very, you know, hey, I mean, you go in office by yourself and you're doing computer code, and it's, you know, solitary. So, you know, just parents maybe aren't always thinking like this for your kids. So this would be a case where curriculum could really, you know, fill in some cases where, you know, parents just might not address this, especially with younger kids. You know, I mean, I think, you know, conflict resolution and logical thinking and debates don't, you know, come, at least in my mind, a lot of times until you're dealing with teenagers. But I think the earlier they have a basis for this, the better.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, let's shift a little bit. It's kind of a soft shift because we kind of danced around some of these, but one of the next ones on our list of things that ought to be taught in school is mental health. I want to frame this by discussing, you know, maybe specifically what I had in mind was things like stress management. And then as you already sort of danced around a little bit, facing adversity or adversity studies, you know, let people actually know, young people know, how, give them tools. I mean, we've talked about tools for stress management. I've, you know, written articles and done videos on stress management. I know we've covered it with, you know, stoicism and physical techniques for managing stress. But I think that should be taught. It's something everyone is going to be at risk for stress as we get older, real or imagined. And if you don't have any skill set, if it isn't addressed in any way, then there's very real physical and emotional prices that people pay for that. I think that's a, you know, stress management is something very, very important. This could be meditation. It can be the value of exercise. It can be, you're getting proper sleep and dealing with stressful, you know, situations, you know, directly, and good communication skills, things like that. There's lots of ways to deal with stress. And then I know we've talked, how many times have we talked about adversity and how many examples of people with adversity? I think telling a whole class where you just sit and, you know, talk about rough crap that people have gone through and dealt with, it would be an amazing type, you know, experience for a student.
Yeah, I was going to say this is something that even really the military has only gotten a lot better at kind of post 9/11, I think, with the, you know, generations of Iraq and Afghanistan, you know, war veterans, you know, as we've seen, unfortunately, you know, more and more suicides and, you know, people acting out in negative ways in society because they haven't dealt with it properly. But I think it's, you know, a good way that they framed it is, and you could probably do this for kids too, and tell them, hey, you know, it's okay sometimes to not be okay.
Right.
And I think that is a big stepping stone because, I mean, who wants to admit that they're scared or admit that they're nervous or admit, especially when you're, you know, preteen, teenagers in high school. I mean, everybody wants, especially now, I mean, then you have this whole social media persona that you try to, you know, live up to. And so I think, you know, starting there saying, hey, you know, life is not perfect. And even people that have what looks like on the outward, and that's another thing, social media, especially kids that, you know, have money and, you know, they're pretty and athletic or, you know, they're popular, you know, sometimes those kids actually have the hardest time dealing with it because, you know, maybe their home life is, you know, it looks good, but it's very, you know, chaotic because, you know, both parents have big jobs and they're traveling all the time. So they're left alone to their own devices with a checkbook, you know, and that's not a good way to grow up either. So I think, you know, just introducing the fact it's okay to not be okay. And here's some things that, you know, warning signs for yourself to get help. And here's some ways to deal with it. And just to recognize that, say, hey, you know, it's okay to feel anxious. It's okay, you know, to get sweaty palms and, you know, have heart palpitations in stressful situations. That doesn't mean you're weak. That doesn't mean that you have, like, you know, quote unquote problems. It just means they need to be more in tune with this. It reminds me of when they were, you know, talking to us about going into combat. And, you know, especially going into World War I, World War II, you know, they didn't have a lot of preparation. And so, you know, people would have these reactions. I mean, the natural reaction, like you're getting shot at and you're, you know, your buddy just got blown up. You know, you're going to have, you know, negative reactions to that, you know, and sometimes extreme negative reactions, but it's actually abnormal if you don't have a negative reaction, you know. So just teach them how to deal with adversity. You know, it's okay to not be okay, and, you know, some techniques to deal with the stress in the moment and stress long term will probably, you know, I hate to say it, but, you know, save a lot of kids' lives because, the incidence of sometimes I see these stories about kids like 10, 11 years old committing suicide,
right.
You know, and it just breaks your heart. And maybe a class like this would save a lot of those kids, you know.
Suicide's, I think, in the top 3 causes of death in folks under 25 years of age.
It's incredible.
It's really high. Yeah, it's really high. Chris, so I know we have several of these. I want to slip into one more because I think this would be a good one to kind of close out for the sake of time on today's episode.
Sure.
And then what I thought we'd do is I know we talked about at least 4 or 5 more like this that I think let's turn this into a 2-parter just for the sake of time.
Sounds good.
The last one I want to cover tonight is relationship fundamentals. Let me frame this so we can have this discussion. I'm talking about, and I know maybe social studies covers this to some extent or something, but I don't remember ever learning about dynamics and relationships, how to communicate, patterns of abuse. I mean, I sit and teach grown adults that are in abusive relationships that is plain as day to me. You know, just listening to the story, plain as day, emotional, physical, or sexual abused people are everywhere. It's a terrible problem in our communities.
Mm-hmm.
And the person experiencing it has never even, they have no concept that they're in a vicious cycle that they don't see. So I think relationship fundamentals, not just negative things, but even maybe positive things about positive relationships. You know, what's a positive relationship look like? What could be things that make relationships better? Caring, giving, communication, honesty, integrity, you know, all of these things that we know as married men over a long period of time are fundamental to positive relationships. There's so much of that is not taught. Certainly not at home because they're not capable of it or they miss the lecture themselves. What do you think about this idea of relationship fundamentals?
I think it's vitally important. I think it would be, especially in a lot of districts and a lot of areas, if you're talking about public school, I think it would be really hard to get it past, you know, just due to political correctness
Sure.
and all kinds of other stuff. But I think that there's probably a way you could do it with just almost as unemotional and as empirical evidence-based as possible, because some of the things that you mentioned to me, I was, you know, watching a news broadcast, you know, just this week, and you could probably start with fundamental facts saying, hey, 100 years of data shows that if you come from a household where it's your, you know, mother, father, not divorced, living in the same household, and have a college education, it's exponentially more likely that the kids will, you know, be more successful, you know, have less right. likelihood of less. I mean, it's like in every, you know, socioeconomic category, it's like, you know, in every, in avoiding pitfalls, you know, less likely to have drug or alcohol problems, more likely to go to college, more likely to, you know, get married and, you know, have a successful career. It's like, but I think that's where I was getting to the, it would be hard because there's so many, you know, places where it's almost, I hate to say it, but shunned that, you know, the male, female, you know, mother, father, traditional nuclear family is something that is, because there are so many more alternative lifestyles that are accepted now. And, you know, some of that is good because, you know, we don't want to discriminate against people or have people persecuted because they have different lifestyles. But the facts remain that if you want to have a good relationship and have a higher likelihood to be successful growing up, this is what the data shows now. And but I think some of those other things you talked about would have to tie in and say, okay, we'll start there, but, you know, recognizing that that is the perfect situation and things happen, you know, people get divorced, people get remarried, you know, abuse happens, you know, here's some patterns of abuse. But that doesn't mean, you know, kind of going back to the thing before we talked about, it's okay to not be okay just because, you know, you're not from, you know, and that could be an empowering thing too. I think that there's too much of a victim mentality out there a lot where kids are told, it's like, oh, well, you know, you come from a, you know, a single female headed household. So, you know, poor you. So you're going to deal with more things that these other kids are going to deal with. So we're going to, you know, show you how to just get these programs that, you know, can help you and, you know, give you money and handouts where it can be empowering to say, hey, here's a bunch of examples of people that came from the worst circumstances, but, you know, you can deal with that, you know, and you can be your own person and you can get out of this and here's how you do it. So I think, I don't know, I hate to say it because I agree 100% with the fundamentals of what you're saying, but I could see in a public school setting in certain, you know, areas, even though it has good intentions, I could see somebody picking it apart, unfortunately, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, this is our podcast. This is not the State Board of Education, but
yeah.
I like what two things that you said. The first was I get all the complexity that could bring in because there are people with agendas. There are, quite frankly, there's just different ways people live, and I'm not particularly you know, judgmental about any of that. But the reality is, I like the idea of the science-based. You know, coursework where you sort of would be examining how relationships and different variables in relationships or different patterns of behavior, how that leads to, you know, good or bad outcomes. Also, whether you're, you know, gay, lesbian, cross-gender, mixed relations of some sort, okay, whatever that is, there are still fundamental how do human beings relate to each other.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I know, you know, certainly in my career, I'm very open to, I have to accept and understand that people live in different ways. And I think I mentioned my Uncle Bob teaching me that many years ago when I was spending some time with him. And it was a great lesson he taught me that, you know, you have to understand people live different ways. And so I don't really judge, you know, how people live their lives. But humans treat each other certain ways, and you can be a gay couple, and still there are patterns of abuse, there are dynamics of relationships, there's communication tactics and techniques that could be more beneficial to a positive relationship. And then maybe even other things, maybe even somebody looking at pros and cons of cohabitation or the pros and cons of marriage and all these things, I think are... If they could be somehow taught in a way that was stripped a bit of the identities and more into the practical reasons, you know, that humans behave certain ways, regardless of gender, orientation, race, you know, all these things that we fight and scramble over and try to divide ourselves in by – it seems like we could still fundamentally look at the patterns of relationships. And I like the way you mentioned that about using the science, because there's science for everything. Yeah. It's out there. And if some kind of, somehow that could be taught so that, and I feel like sometimes for a lot of people, it would almost have to be taught outside the home to some extent, although it's best in the home or maybe in the church or, you know, some type of, you know, situation like that. But it would be some way to say, this is just how humans interact with each other. And I think, and this is a positive way, this is a negative way. If that happens to be, you know, it doesn't matter, plug in the variable, you know, whatever that social variable is, this is how people act. And I think that would be a valuable thing, albeit I agree with what you're saying, very unlikely that the state school board would allow us to put that course together.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, well, you know, but, you know, that's why I think we have good interaction on some of these topics, because, you know, we see things commonly, but a little bit different. And as you were talking, a light bulb went off. I was like, you know, I would be okay almost taking the genders and some of the other, you know, defining terms out of it and say, you know, two humans in a committed relationship that are, you know, remain together for their entire life. And you can even take marriage out of it, right? I mean, you, right, can, like you said, I mean, it's in a committed relationship, long-term committed relationship with children are more likely to have successful, non-drug addicted college graduate children than situations where there's abuse, there's single parent households, there's, you know, and fill in the blank of, you know, social ills. And here's some of the things that are likely causes of those relationship breakdowns. And then there's tons of data on that. You know, it's money, it's religion, it's, you know, it's different. The hot topics of, you know, relationship meltdowns, you know, so that you can, you know, teach kids early on, you know, here's what healthy relationships, you know, look like, here's the dynamics of it, here's some pitfalls in, you know, like I said, the pro and cons of, you know, things like, you know, living with people that you're not, you know, married to, or don't have like a defined, you know, committed long-term relationship.
Yeah.
With, you know, so,
yeah, I was going to say, like, flip the coin there, because you could also look at just general patterns of short-term relationships, you know, casual relationships, or, you know, all that kind of, I just think looking at those in some way, because, you know, if you're, you know, 17 years old, graduating from high school, and you realize that there, you know, you get out into the world, and 3 months after you've moved out of your home, you realize, well, there's casual relationships, there's short-term relationships, and if you had no sort of, you know, even a pattern or something that you could recognize, it's about pattern recognition. Hey, what kind of relationship is this? Oh, this is a guy that just wants to date me or whatever, you know? And, or this is a guy that seems really serious and he's talking about family and whatnot. So he may be a long-term relationship kind of person. All of those kind of things could be taught, like you said, gender neutral, you know, maybe just, but again, you know, you tie in religious aspects, you know, cultural norms. There's a ton of ways that could go, but it is something that I wish more people had more relationship maturity. Yeah. I certainly wish in my life early on I had more relationship maturity, but maybe that's just part of growing up, I guess. But I don't know. Hindsight, I always keep looking back thinking, I wish I knew more when I was younger. So I think that's why I gravitate to these types of topics.
Well, I was going to say, you look at, you take maybe a macro view of what we just covered, and you think about just the things in life that, you know, as you get to our age and older and you reflect back on it, I mean, these are all important things. You know, I wish I would have saved money sooner. I wish I had not wasted time. You know, I wish I would have, you know, not been more reasoned in my interactions with people, so I didn't emotionally, you know, end work and personal friendships. I wish I had known more about, you know, what a healthy relationship looks like and what doesn't look like, you know, how to deal with stress. I mean, I think what we're talking about is, you know, just, I mean, all of them are just like good human skills, good life skills. And I think that, even if it was just 30 minutes once a week. I mean, it wouldn't have to be, you know, something huge. I mean, it could be little tidbits of, you know, these, you know, good practices. And if you tied it in and got, and they build upon each other, you know, you think about once you get to high school, especially if it was all, you know, in a, coordinated curriculum, I mean, you'd have kids by the time they graduated high school would be more set up for success, whether they went to college or not, which is, you know, what you hope for when you go through that many years of school. So.
Absolutely. Well, Chris, let's call it a night. We have had a good episode, and I've got five more on our list that I think we'll do part two. And I love your thing you just threw out there, the human skills. So well, maybe we'll call this human skills 101, things you should have been taught in school.
And then we'll have
part, part two after that. Be a better human. All right, awesome. Well, let's call it a night there, and we'll get back with a part two coming up in the next few weeks. Any final closing thoughts?
I just want to send a shout out. You know, we talked earlier before we started recording. I mean, we had an incredible guest that we had the pleasure of interviewing last week. Just, you know, he'd be great to have on for a part two, three, four. I mean, Brian Chontosh, where, you know, the guy was so humble, and I didn't want to, you know, pick his brain for too much longer. But he was kind enough this week to share on social media that he was on our podcast and on his podcast, which is called the Crooked Butterfly Podcast, available on all the typical, podcast mediums. But he talked about us on there. I guess he did four podcasts last week.
So, he sounded a little hoarse.
Well, and he ran 100 miles in the mountains, like also like right before that, which is so. And of course, but talk about human skills. I mean, I don't even know if he. It reminds me of like they did the top 100 NFL players. It's going on right now. And there was like a commentator who I think had been an NFL player, but not at that level. And he's like, you know, they say all men are created equal. Well, it's like, you know, I have more in common, you know, with the toaster than I do with, you know, JJ Watt or something. And so that's the way I feel. You know, I'm a Marine officer and I've done all these things, but you hear some of the stuff that he did. And that's just, it was great to have him on and just share some lessons. But I would say if you want to hear some interesting reflections on what makes somebody like him tick, you know, check out, the Big Fish Foundation, which is a charitable veteran service organization that he's involved with, and the Crooked Butterfly Podcast and the Crooked Butterfly Ranch. You know, if you want to have some, immersive experiences, you know, hopefully COVID, depending, I should have one of those immersive experiences, at his ranch in October. So I'm looking, I'll say I'm looking forward to it. I'm cautiously optimistic about, you know, what somebody like that is going to do to us in the mountains. So check out Tosh, as he's known. And, we look forward to having him on again and getting more interesting people like that on so we can all share as a community.
Awesome, Chris. Have a great night.
You too.